Hello and welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason, and with me again is K Sawyer Paul. Welcome back, sir.
I couldn't wait. I just, you know, I had to do this again as soon as possible.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, you're always welcome on to the program. In fact, this is a little known fact. I'm just going to share this with the audience, but in the WrestleSpective Constitution, and of course, you know, being a responsible podcast, we are governed by a constitution. You know, obviously that's clear. Mm-hmm. You are, you know, officially the lieutenant governor of the WrestleSpective program. So, and in the Constitution, you have the power to call for an episode when you know when needed in an emergency situation. And clearly, after the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and Bray Wyatt, you know, we had to, it warranted, you know, constitutional intervention.
I kind of wanted to just do this while it was still fresh.
Okay.
You know, because it, for reasons we'll get into, I feel like this was a special contest. And I thought, you know what, who better to talk to about this than my friend Jason, who happens to have a podcast where we talk about wrestling matches.
Yeah. So nice built-in excuse. I appreciate that. Yeah, I was, I did not watch it live. So I was sort of aware of there. I was on Twitter enough to be aware of there was this, you know, weird thing that was, some people were loving, some people were hating, some people were confused. But beyond that, not really much going into here. In fact, I believe I revealed this on our previous episode, but I have actually not watched a professional wrestling match that occurred after the Bill Goldberg, Brock Lesnar match in November of 2016. Where, you know, Goldberg comes back and he wins in 8 seconds or whatever. So I've missed, you know, 3.5-4 years of wrestling. Don't really have much of an idea of what Cena or Wyatt have been up to in the past 4 years, but you know, it's okay. Sometimes the best wrestling is no context wrestling. And so I'm here for that.
Sure. And so I, when you mentioned that you hadn't watched a match in several years, the first thing I thought was intense jealousy. I was just, he's free. You know, how does he do it? because I try. You've heard me for years go, oh, I need an off season. I need to take a few months off. You were able to do it for a very long time. And I've never quite been able to stay away quite that long.
Yeah, I don't exactly know what drew me out of it. Well, I blame Shane McMahon, but I don't know if that's actually true or not, you know. But I don't exactly know why I'm back in outside of, you know, we're in the midst of like a weird crisis and this is comfortable. So, And speaking of weird crises, you know, we've got this match and, it is very, I don't know. For all I know, every match is like this in WWE now, but I'm guessing that's probably not true.
No, you're absolutely right. Pretty much like the day after you stopped watching, all matches became like this. And, this is just kind of regular for us now. This is just the world we live in. And this is just, you know, it's just pretty much everybody does matches like this now. Frankly, careers are longer, but stranger.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
You know, I think quite a few wrestlers would look at this and go, I'm guessing neither of those two have neck problems after this match.
Right. The not much in the way of traditional action, of course, but plenty in, you know, the realm of drama. And, you know, obviously, even though I refer to this as no context wrestling, the context is built throughout the match, as there are, and pretty much, you know, the majority of references I know enough about both careers, both men to, you know, get what they're referring to. I mean, obviously they're going, you know, 18 years back for Cena and nearly a decade for Bray Wyatt. So, you know, there's plenty to mine there. And, you know, and I watched enough, you know, up until the last, you know, 4 years or so that, you know, I can come into this and pretty much get what they're, trying to do. Didn't really know much about the Fiend character coming in here. That was new to me. I assumed that the talking puppets were sort of unique to this match, but apparently the talking puppets are part of his shtick. Is there anything more you can tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. So I can sort of quickly catch you up. So you left in 2017. So you'd already seen John Cena defeat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. That happened in 2015. So you're all caught up there.
Sure.
They had a bit of a small, that feud continued for a few months. But then, of course, John Cena won the feud and Bray Wyatt went off to do feuds with other people, generally fairly similar feuds with other people for several years, where he would show up, he would be spooky, he would maybe defeat them once or twice, but then almost all of them would beat him handily at the end of the feud. It became kind of a running joke amongst people because the pattern was there and it was obvious and there was really no threat, this sort of spooky, scary character became a bit of a joke. I think that kind of culminated with a WrestleMania match with Randy Orton. That was maybe the lowest point of the Bray Wyatt character. And that, I believe, happened in 2018? WrestleMania 2018? I'm not going to lie to you, man. I've seen them all, and every WrestleMania since 2015, 2016 kind of all blends together to me. I wonder if some of this match is, like, to shake that up. And I'll get into my theories about John Cena himself later. But, so Bray, around this time last year, disappeared for a while, came back, and instead of just being sort of his regular Bray Wyatt character, had this funhouse thing, and he was just himself. And it was, it was the WWE vignette tour, where instead of doing a match, there would be a backstage segment that would be kind of repetitive for 3 or 4 months, and something about the character changes, they come back and then they do a bunch of squash matches and then they're reintegrated back into the show, right? We've seen this with dozens of characters by this point. What he brings back is this funhouse setup where there's a bunch of puppets, dolls, and they all seem to speak to a part of his psyche or a part of someone else's psyche. He has this sort of wall of people that he's feuded with, that he talks to, so he'll regularly talk to Kane and Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins and people who are in and around his orbit, and they're pretty good as a sort of character thing. It was kind of working. It sort of fixed the character, it reset the character. Of course, everybody had the fear that the character itself would be great, and then it would run up against a WWE superstar that WWE didn't want to lose to someone like Bray Wyatt, right? And this would all just get this would all just come crumbling down as soon as he ran into someone like a John Cena. So that kind of happened about a month ago, where Bray Wyatt, who'd been holding the Universal Championship, which is not a belt that existed when you were...
I don't think it did. I don't think it existed. So
I think it showed up around 2017, but yeah, it was maybe just in its nascent period around then, because Goldberg won it a little bit after that Brock Lesnar match.
Okay.
Anyways, it's far and away the most worthless world title... most worthless title they've ever made, as far as I'm concerned. It's a terrible joke of a belt. But he held it. He beat Seth Rollins for it back in the fall, and he's held it since about a month ago, where he fought Goldberg and lost. And he makes note of that in this match. There's a point in time where he goes, "Still, they're taking from me." And I think that's a reference to the Goldberg thing, where he's made this amazing new opportunity for himself, and still WWE takes his character and ruins it for their convenient needs. But we'll, like, we haven't even mentioned the fact that this isn't even like a real match yet, but we'll get there. Anyways, right after he loses the title, he comes out and challenges John Cena for this match.
Right.
That's about when things start to get kind of weird. So pretty much a week after that, they stop doing shows in front of crowds. And this feud goes from, eh, we're not really looking forward to this, to, oh, this is creepy as hell. There is an interview that they do together in the WWE Performance Center, that empty ring thing that WrestleMania took place in. And it, like, captivated Twitter, like, because it was the first, it was the first time WWE did a sort of back and forth interview with no crowd response at all. And they put it up on Twitter, and it got a massive reaction. And people who don't necessarily watch wrestling all the time, or maybe lapsed fans, or are people who come into it when interesting stuff has happened, this piqued their interest. So this match had a lot going in terms of hype. Like, how would this deliver? How would they do this? There was kind of a rumor going around that some of the WrestleMania matches would not be matches in the traditional sense, because they didn't have a crowd to do this show in front of, and so they wanted to switch things up. I think they thought that just doing match after match after match in front of no crowd would make for a dead show, which it definitely did in some cases. WrestleMania 36 is a weird-ass show for lots of reasons, this match just being only one of them. You know, say what you will about WrestleMania 36, but it does not bleed together with the others whatsoever. This is a wholly unique WrestleMania. After many, many years of WrestleManias looking exactly the same.
Right. As you alluded to, basically the four WrestleManias previous all kind of running together in your mind. And I felt that way about a lot of the, you know, WrestleManias in the 20s as well, where it's like, oh yeah, I can't even figure out which one that fits into. So part of that's us getting older, but part of that I think is also like, you know, show piling up on show upon piling upon show, and the way that, you know, just kind of the pacing of modern wrestling, let's say. So
I do think it's just us just being the old guard, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. I think even WWE doesn't know what WrestleMania is what anymore. I think they stopped numbering them for a reason.
Fair enough. Getting into a little bit of what happens, John Cena comes out first. Usual type entrance, of course, you know, without a crowd, but he's playing to the non-existent crowd. Basically doing his usual shtick. And then he starts to say, "Welcome to WrestleMania." And then we get a montage of Vince McMahon, Mean Gene Okerlund, others in distorted voices saying WrestleMania, "Welcome to WrestleMania," which transitions into the Firefly Funhouse, where you hear sounds of kids cheering, and we come upon a smiling Bray Wyatt with a lovely red sweater, who is in the funhouse itself, and in this format is much like a, you know, Sesame Street or Mr. Rogers type kids show, I would say.
Yeah. So this is the set they've been using all year.
Right.
I'm actually quite fascinated how you are going to do play-by-play for this match. Because, you know, your thing on WrestleSpective is often going move by move. You know, you're a fantastic play-by-play guy. And I'm curious to know how you're going to do this match.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I try to only highlight the really important things and gloss over the non-essential details, but I do appreciate that. Yes, so Bray, you know, makes reference to, you know, telling John that, you know, let's go into another world where our darkest desires aren't kept secret. He wants to take a look at who John Cena really is, that John, in fact, is his own most dangerous opponent. You know, a basic, like, you know, come on and play, John, type of taunt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm not thinking anything of this is too different. I'm like, okay, this is kind of Bray Wyatt's usual thing. Even before the Funhouse, this is kind of how he would talk, right? He was over cryptic and he would overact and it was all a bit silly, all a bit corny. And a lot of this is silly and corny. But what changes is like the fact that John sort of just teleports in, because he didn't teleport out of the last scene, like a cut to a montage. Right?
Right.
And WWE
right.
is pretty good about cutting to montages. This is a company that does very good montages. Right? So it's not necessarily weird for them to do a cool montage. But to have John Cena just sort of pop in, that's your first clue that maybe this is going to be a little bit different than your typical thing.
Yes. And we get the sound of the kids cheering and then a bit of ominous music. Yes, ominous. I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. And then we have a talking puppet behind the television addresses John. And now, is this talking puppet known to you? Do you know who this puppet is?
I know his name. His name is Ramblin' Rabbit.
Ramblin'
Rabbit. And you're not going to get a whole lot of adult pieces from the Firefly Funhouse. It's very much meant to be a send-up of Pee-wee's Playhouse and those sorts of things, right?
Yes.
This one, from what I remember, seemed to get bullied a lot. He's the one that gets picked on. He's the character that, like, you feel sorry for a little bit.
Sure.
Out of all of them.
He seems nice.
Yeah, seems like a nice puppet, right?
He's friendly to John. You know, he's like, what's up, John? Like, hey, just go to the door. That's where you got to go. You know, he's helpful and friendly.
That's right.
Seems all good. Yeah, very casual puppet.
Nothing else to read into there.
No.
So John goes through the door. He does what the puppet says. You know, he answers the adventurer's call.
He does. He is now in a dark room. And I really would have liked it at this moment if John had maybe declared to the audience that there are no Hulkamaniacs here. You know, if I could have just, you know, gotten a little Dungeon of Doom reference here, that would have been nice. But no, not appropriate for the moment.
Before we continue, how Dungeon of Doom did this feel to you at first?
It felt like 7.5 Dungeon of Doom.
Right. Okay. And then how close did this feel to the beach fight with Davey Boy Smith and Sting versus Vader and Psycho Sid?
Oh, you know what? I'm not sure I've ever actually seen that.
Oh, it's great.
I'm not sure I've seen the beach fight. I think that I've heard about it, of course, but I don't believe I've ever actually seen it. Yeah, I think, honestly, to be, you know, Dungeon of Doomy, you really need to have smoke. There was no smoke, so that adds a whole lot of atmosphere right there. And, you know, and Kamala, obviously. You know, you...
Of course.
Sure,
yeah, you need him.
need some Kamala. So
Cena goes into the thing, and he's just in a blank space. He's in the void now.
Right. Yes.
What do you make of this?
Well, I don't know if there's anything to really make of it, but do you have any theories?
For me, it feels sort of nascent. It feels like, okay, where this is slate clean moment, we're going to have the whole audience take a breath here, but we're also going to make them a little bit uncomfortable.
Sure.
You know, it's cool, but it's also, it was the moment where I went, oh, this isn't going to be a wrestling match at all. Like, this isn't even going to be like a fight, like a street fight or anything like that. Like, so there were multiple matches at WrestleMania this year that didn't really take place in the ring. Edge and Randy Orton had a street fight that went all the way around the Performance Center. Very little of that took place in the ring. AJ Styles and The Undertaker had a street fight in a completely different location. And that had its own cinematic flair. but it was also a linear fight, you know, that had had back and forth sections and more or less resembled a wrestling match, you know, or at least a wrestling match between someone like The Undertaker and someone like AJ Styles. There wasn't really any wrestling moves, but you know, there was punching and stuff like that. Like, sure. You're used to that sort of sort of like garbage fighting wrestling style, you know. And people liked those. Well, they liked the first one. They didn't really like Edge and Randy Orton because it went for 40 minutes. but no one went, this is different. They just went, this is cool, right? This one, though, as soon as that Vince McMahon puppet shows up.
yes. That's when I start to, you know, raise my eyebrows a little bit. Yes, puppet Vince McMahon. He has devil horns. He has a old WWF suit. He would wear, you know, the 1991-ish Vince McMahon, I would say here, with the dramatic music. And then we see Vince offering a challenge to John. He repeatedly says ruthless aggression, and then also threatens to fire him if he doesn't go out and perform to his liking, basically. Now this is in reference to, and we'll get there with the next scene, but this is in reference to Vince challenging John early in his career to, you know, essentially go and grab the brass ring and make yourself a star and blah blah blah. And then there's a story where he kind of does that, where Kurt Angle issues an open challenge and John Cena comes out. Cena, I think, was he entirely unknown, or had he been on TV a little bit but hadn't really done much yet? I don't remember that off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'll set this in here. So, yeah, in 2002, I want to say it's May or June 2002, something like that, Kurt Angle comes out, issues an open challenge to anybody in the back who feels like they can go toe-to-toe with him, who he's never faced before.
Right.
I think that was something they dropped from that scene, but it was very important because it's like, oh, we're going to get a new character, and a new character arrives in John Cena, and this is the first time John Cena's been on WWE TV. He was in OVW, which was their sort of developmental NXT style thing at the time. He'd been there for a while, people knew him, he went by the Prototype, that was his OVW wrestling name. And yeah, he comes out and I believe it's Taz or Michael Cole, one of them says, that's John Cena. We know that guy. As if to say, he's already in this universe. Like, there's seemingly no confusion as to who John Cena is. Something I always found interesting about John was that he didn't come from nowhere. He was always there, and yet he wasn't.
Okay.
You know?
That seems appropriate for his career, yes. You know?
Yeah, right?
Right.
John Cena has always carried this sense of inevitability. And yet you're like, but he wasn't here last week, right? Right? Am I crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Vince McMahon thing, before John Cena sort of answers this call, there's a fairly famous backstage meeting in WWE after WrestleMania 18 where Vince McMahon sort of holds this all hands meeting saying that he's looking for the next star. And this is fresh in my mind because I just watched WWE's Ruthless Aggression documentary series. It's like a 5-6 part series that details 2002 to 2006 roughly. And it talks about Cena, Orton, Batista, Brock Lesnar, you know, and like Lita and Trish and like the, you know, sort of the big pillars of that period of time.
Right.
It's fascinating, but I can't help but think now that they put that out so that all of that stuff would be fresh in our minds for this. Because a lot of it connects.
That makes a lot of sense. And of course, not having seen that, that was completely lost to me here, you know, and I vaguely, you did a much better job of contextualizing that than I did. Cause you know, that was kind of not a strong memory for me, but that absolutely the good context there.
This is one of those things where it's like the WWE Network puts out a documentary, John Cena sits down and does like 60 minutes of character reflection in this documentary, then goes and does this match, which is about character reflection.
Right. Yeah.
I can't help but think that's connected. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. So we'll continue. So he debuts against Bray Wyatt. Right.
Right.
And John Cena's wearing his 2002 outfit.
Right. Looking sharp in that. I have to say, you know, he certainly is still in good shape for it.
It still fits, you know?
Yeah. he's a little smaller now, but he's more cut now, I believe, than he was, yeah. You know? So,
definitely.
Yeah. So Bray, it's basically Bray giving the open challenge, and then it's sort of interspersed with clips of Angle doing so. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, as we see 2020, John appears in his original look. And then Cena is relatively powerless here. Bray is taunting and mocking John, and all John can really do is swing wildly and miss and yell ruthless aggression.
Because that's all he's got, right?
Right.
At this stage of his career, he has nothing else but that.
Yes.
What an amazing bit of, you know, of just character criticism, you know?
Yeah, right. And Bray taunts and mocks John. He says, "I am literally living your biggest failure right now."
Is what John said in the documentary. Like, okay. exactly the same words in the documentary. He says, "People look back on that ruthless aggression thing and think I came out of nowhere and was a big success. That was my biggest failure." Like, he says that exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and yeah, because he, again, got a small push for about a month or 2 months or so, and then just kind of faded into the background and was, you know, basically, I don't think he was even used the next WrestleMania or was in the open or was, you know, not on TV. It took another year or so for him to kind of catch on. We'll get into the character that he was, but because obviously they're going to reference that too.
Yes.
But yeah, this segment pretty much ends with Bray bailing after dodging another move from John and then John chasing him away. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and then cut to the next scene, which is, you know, again, this is something wrestling matches don't generally do. They don't generally have scene cuts,
right?
You know, where you get this, okay, now we're going on to the next bit of rising action. Then we're going to get to my favorite part of Bray Wyatt's, like, backstage vignettes of the last year. He does these Saturday night main event things, and I love them so much.
Oh, absolutely. Before we get to Bray himself, we cut to puppet Vince and another puppet who says, "Too hot to handle, too cold to hold, dig it." Is that supposed to be Macho Man, or is that like a combination of Saturday Night's Main Event announcers, or do we know who that is?
I think, here's my theory.
Okay.
Because this is all wackadoo, so I think everything's fair game. Okay. I think that puppet is what Vince McMahon wanted the Macho Man to become, but Macho Man left because he still wanted to be a wrestler.
Okay. Okay, no. I'll buy it. Why not?
I think in Vince McMahon's mind, there was a period of time where his dream announce team was himself and Randy Savage, and that was the perfect WWE announce team.
I like it. So then we cut to Obsession, the Saturday Night's Main Event theme, and then we go through the entire intro.
They had to pay for that, right? They would have had to pay for that song.
I would assume so. Yeah,
this is a new broadcast.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So, and then, yes, I think you can do better justice to Bray's promo here than I can.
Yeah. So, oh my God. He talks about, I think this is where it kind of stops being about John Cena and starts being more about what Vince McMahon wants a main eventer to be.
Okay.
There's so much Vince in this, right? Like,
right.
That Vince puppet isn't the only Vince thing. Like, all of these words are Vince words.
Sure.
Like, Bray Wyatt is saying back to the camera what Vince would have said to so many people over the years, which is, we need you to be big, we need you to be muscular, we need you to be this incredible bodybuilder. And he literally says, regardless of talent, right? It doesn't matter what you can do. It just matters what you look like. Bray Wyatt introduces John Cena as the perfect form of this thing that Vince McMahon wants.
Yes, and he's doing so he's got a headband. It's very 80s style. He's behind a cage. He's introducing his partner, as you said, touting his big muscles. I'd say this is like a Hercules Hernandez style, level of promo, kind of a standard, big muscle meathead, just, yelling about stuff. The content is good here, obviously, but then we're introduced to, is it Johnny Large Meat? Is that the
Johnny
name?
Johnny Large Meat.
Okay, that is the name. Okay.
Johnny Large Meat.
Okay.
That's what he calls John Cena.
I just wanted to make sure. So, and then.
This is still a PG show.
It is, yes. Cena comes out, and he's wearing his jorts, and he is, he's pumping iron. He repeatedly pumping faster and faster and faster, probably like 50 times in like 10 seconds. I mean, something crazy. We get generic 80s music during it, like a Rocky montage type thing where, mm-hmm. and then Bray's looking on as we do so. I would say some glee and admiration in his eyes. Would you say that's fair?
A little bit, like he kind of doesn't believe that this is actually happening, kind of like right. how the whole audience doesn't believe that this is actually happening as they're watching it. I love that it cuts to the one girl puppet, and her like jaw just goes slack watching John Cena pump iron. I thought that was a pretty good, just throw some absolute punchline comedy into this,
Yeah, that's great, yeah. So suddenly, John, suddenly has no strength at in his arms. They're limp at his side, and we get menacing music. And then Bray grabs John and tosses him off screen. And then we cut to where John is now his 2004 hip hop self. He's standing in front of the SmackDown fist, the old classic SmackDown fist.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing a Yankees throwback jersey, and then we cut to his Basic Thugonomics entrance montage, from that time as well.
I love that he's wearing a Yankees jersey. I feel like that is incredible self-awareness by this character. I don't know if you remember the CM Punk feud with John Cena.
Yes.
And one of the tenets of that feud was CM Punk suggesting that John Cena had become not a human anymore, but a franchise, and that he'd basically become the New York Yankees.
Right.
I still remember that was one of the best exchanges between them. And John Cena lost his temper at that, just as he's about to lose his temper over other small things. But yeah, he's wearing a Yankees jersey. He's the Yankees. He's the franchise.
Sure. And as a Bostonian, proud Bostonian, that's even extra credibility to the argument that he'll do anything for money.
Right. I always forget that he's from Boston because he's, again, not a human. He's a franchise. He's whatever you need him to be.
Right. Yeah. And he hasn't really, I don't know about the last 4 years, obviously, but before then, I feel like that was that was something that was pretty central to the very early part of his character, something that they made kind of a big deal about. And that sort of kind of faded away over the years. So, Cena does, again, the first rap promo I've ever heard him do in recent years. I don't know if he's brought that back at all. But I'm guessing not. That's something I know that he rarely, if ever, had done since, he really stopped doing that character around, 05, 06, when he became champion and kind of transitioned into, the persona that we're more familiar with. The main focus of that is making fun of Bray for repeatedly blowing, his chances at success, and he does point out the fact that now he's only able to rhyme during this time. And then there's some like punchline. There's like a smattering of like applause or reaction to sort of the, you know, the punchline for each one of his verses.
Yeah. So I will just add some context here because you haven't been watching. At WrestleMania 35 last year, John Cena didn't have a match, but he made a cameo. He came out and interrupted another wrestler, and he came out as Thuganomics John Cena.
Ah, okay, there you go. Okay.
Wearing the Yankees jersey and everything. Ah. Basically wearing everything he's wearing in this scene.
Okay.
So, like that, I guess they just kept that outfit for him in case he needed it again.
Hey,
yeah. Yep. So it's not quite as far away in WrestleMania viewers' eyes as like 05-06. But yeah, it was just a quick cameo. It was almost like a nostalgia hit moment.
Sure.
Which, you know, incredibly regressive actually. in terms of how this reflection is happening. Do you get a small little sense of Ghost of Christmas Past, Present, Future in this whole thing?
Very much so. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking around this time. I was like, oh, they're going in that order. Okay. So yeah, they're like, so John Cena hits Wyatt with some mean bars.
Absolutely.
And this is the first time in this wrestling match that John Cena gets offense in.
Right. Yes.
It's been all
offense,
Wyatt up until now.
Yeah.
It's been all Wyatt up until now, right?
Yeah.
So if this is a wrestling match, then there needs to be some back and forth. And this is John Cena's time to be offensive. And he's actually offensive. Right? Like his offense is literally offensive in this moment. And the cheers go to crickets pretty quickly, right?
Right, yes.
Like that editing is mean to John Cena.
sure, yes. Very funny, I might add. You know, very, very effectively done, yes.
Yeah.
So when Cena's done, we get some sad music as Bray, you know, he feels aggrieved by, you know, these things that Cena has said to him. And then there's a very well done speech that basically sums up that, you know, that Bray has had to earn everything that he has while John has had unlimited chances. The fact that John is not a hero. He's a bully. He turns weaknesses into jokes. He'd do anything for fame. Basically, you know, the types of things that the character has been accused of, that we accused Hulk Hogan of, frankly, you know, that, sure. I think definitely apply to the John Cena character as well. I think hitting close to home with his response as well. I think both of these are effectively personal in their attacks. I did watch the pre-match.
Deeply.
Yeah, I watched the pre-match promo, you know, after I watched the match, actually. So I did get a little bit that they were trading some similar barbs in those exchanges. But yeah, this was definitely very effective. This ends with John charging at Bray, but we cut away and Bray disappeared. And then
fun teleporting again. Yeah.
And then we cut to Bray back in the ring, who has grabbed a chair and then knocks John out.
Yeah. Yeah. That chair comes back in a second. But yeah, just straight murder, right? Like,
right. Yes.
And that is maybe our first traditional wrestling move in this match, is a chair to the head.
Yeah. that would have fitted the Attitude Era for sure.
Oh yeah, sure. That counts as a wrestling move. I would challenge at this stage in the match, which I feel is about halfway through, I would challenge people to go, what's a wrestling move? Because depending on your definition of what a wrestling move is, this is either the worst wrestling match of all time or one of the most creative. This one's going to be pretty polarizing, and it's going to be polarizing for years. So I'm super curious as to where they go from here.
Right.
But yeah, so he knocks him out with a chair, and then they go to the next scene. They cut again.
Yes, and then we go back to, and I think that these are the original vignettes from when Bray Wyatt debuted, and you know, what was it, I guess like 2011 or so.
Yep.
Yes, so you know, with the I had the whole world in my hands, and they talk, they also allude to, and I'd actually forgotten that they'd wrestled at WrestleMania before. Before I watched this match, but they of course, you know, wrestled at WrestleMania 36 years ago. And Bray refers to it as, you know, his grandest failure, that he had a chance here to reach for the brass ring and so forth. But yeah, I think as you've talked about in previous references, it's also referencing the idea that John had the opportunity to maybe help Bray Wyatt in his career and failed to do so.
There are many periods of time in John Cena's career where critics suggest that he could have done something to help someone else's career and he didn't. I think probably the most famous one is the Nexus SummerSlam match where he more or less decided to squash six people at once.
Right.
That one's pretty. Husky Harris was in that group.
That's right.
You know, he brought up the name Husky Harris, but that plot point didn't really come up. Although they could have used that if they wanted
to.
Sure. You know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, why didn't they use just half a second from that match too? Just throw it in. Why not? But maybe Bray Wyatt's memory doesn't go back that far. You know. Maybe it's not the same, you know how it is.
Sure.
I like that Bray mentions his biggest failure as well to suggest that both of these performers are going through a journey right now. This isn't just Bray Wyatt sending John through a fight against himself. Bray Wyatt's fighting against himself as well here, and the two of them are sort of just interlinked. I don't know that one ever hates the other or one like wants the other to not be around. I think Bray Wyatt wanted John Cena's help. You know, I think honestly, maybe in real life at WrestleMania 30, the man playing Bray Wyatt probably wanted John Cena to give him a little bit more than he gave him. But that's John Cena, man. That's
yeah.
They talk about that in this match, right?
Right. And even the story here is a little bit offbeat because going in, you have Cena saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to wrestle at this WrestleMania because it's time to let other people go by, you know, which is kind of like almost like I'm above this kind of mentality now, you know, and Bray is like, hey, man, I just want to have a match with you. And, you know, it's not like Cena is the one who wants to, like, end Bray, but Bray doesn't seem to, I mean, he wants to mess with Cena, he wants to fight Cena, but he doesn't want to seem to, you know, completely, like, Cena's the one who seems mad about it. Bray doesn't really seem like, yes. There doesn't really seem like there's anger there, but there's, I don't know what exact emotion I would say. There's certainly an element of mischievousness to it, mm-hmm. and probably something a little bit more sinister than that, but I wouldn't quite call it, you know, like not even quite resentment. I don't know exactly what I would classify that as.
I don't know how the character Bray Wyatt puts John Cena through all this, just for hate, right? There's too much love here. There's too much care in this match in what he's showing him, right?
Sure.
It's like, it's a little obsession. Like Bray Wyatt seems to know John Cena extremely well. If all of this is just happening inside Bray Wyatt's head, you know, it's like, yeah. I hate you. And I know all the lyrics to all of your songs.
Right. Yes. 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 Very well put. So we then cut back to the ring. Bray takes a Cena who appears to be unconscious and then puts him in the position for, it's still called Sister Abigail, his finishing move.
Yeah, it's still called Sister Abigail, even all though right. Randy Orton murdered her.
Oh, that wasn't very nice.
No.
But then he appears to let John slip out of the move. And then and then Bray saying that it's not time to finish this yet. And then Bray alludes to a past angle between them. And I'm not sure if this was at the previous WrestleMania or if it was somewhere during their feud, in which John wouldn't hit Bray with the chair.
This did happen at WrestleMania 30 during that match. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Very, very much just a straight up callback to that moment. This whole like Bray at the time, Bray Wyatt felt like, I think he felt like he couldn't beat John Cena, but maybe he could change John Cena.
Okay. You
know, turn him heel or something like that. Make him do something bad. You know? Right. But he couldn't even do that, right? That's how much of a failure Bray Wyatt was in 2014, you know?
right, exactly, yes. So John does swing it this time, but Bray magically disappears. So then we cut to the NWO Monday Nitro intro. Not WCW Monday Nitro, but NWO Monday Nitro.
This is the exact moment when I thought, well, I got to talk to Jason about this.
Bray Wyatt is out there doing his best Kevin Nash. He's wearing a Wolfpack t-shirt, and it is intermingled with Eric Bischoff, clips of Eric Bischoff doing the thing that Eric Bischoff does best, which is be smarmy.
Hey, man, if you told me that there would be NWO Monday Nitro and Eric Bischoff references and John Cena in an NWO t-shirt at WrestleMania 36, I would have bet you my house.
Yeah, no. Can you imagine, you know, in 1998, could you imagine 22 years later that you would see clips of Eric Bischoff on WWE television?
So I learned a couple of things from this. I learned that WWE keeps every prop.
Right.
Like, did you think they still had the steel WCW logo from the set?
I don't know. That's a good point.
They just have that. That's just in their warehouse.
Right. So could you imagine watching wrestling in 1990, watching WWF in 1990, watching the Ultimate Warrior, watching Tito Santana, you know, watching the Hart Foundation, and there being a reference on 1990 WWF television to something that happened in 1968.
Oh man, I hate these so bad. The time joke of, you know, actually the Beatles were only around for 8 years, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
You're right. That would be impossible.
It's really weird. It's really, really strange. Now, if you're watching AWA, you'd hear them talk about like Wahoo McDaniel's football career. So they would actually reference stuff that happened in the mid '60s. But this is WWF we're talking about, you know.
Different. Yeah, they don't like to reference anything that happened 2 months ago.
Right. I guess that just proves that Vern Gagne was ahead of his time. So.
He really was.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Absolutely. By being behind his time, he was actually ahead of his time. It's magic.
Sure. So. This is where my brain breaks a little bit.
Okay. All right.
I can't, like, you know, I want to say 1,000 things and I know they're all wrong, but like, I love it. Like, I love that this exists and I still don't know why it exists. I still don't know why John Cena agreed to do any of this. Why Vince McMahon let any of this happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm just really glad that in quarantine, during a global pandemic, I was given this gift, and I absolutely consider a John Cena NWO Monday Nitro entrance a gift.
Yes, of course, doing his best Hulk Hogan impression, holding the belt with NWO spray painted on it, playing guitar. And then we have Puppet Vince, who says, "This is such good shit," which is not censored.
Good shit.
Yes. I'm assuming that's a Vince catchphrase in real life. But
it's kind of a, it's kind of a backstage joke.
Okay.
Like that's, it seems to be what he says when he likes stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. He uses good shit as his, like, that's his five star.
As his thing. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So another thing, he's holding the World Heavyweight Championship.
He is. Yes.
They just can't get rid of that thing.
They can't. No. Yeah.
How many times has that thing come back?
I mean, okay, is he the NWO champion? Or was he the NWO champion and now is The Fiend the NWO champion after winning this match?
I didn't hear that it was on the line, so.
I mean, you know, I don't know what the rules are among the, you know, NWO championship. I will have to see what the NWO championship committee has to say about it. Maybe I'll
That's
write
true.
Some
the NWO championship on, you know, committee.
Yeah, right. Oh my right. God. Yeah. So who would be on the NWO Championship Committee, you know, of late?
Well,
probably Barry Darts now.
Yeah, it would be referee Nick Patrick.
Right, yes.
Right, he'd definitely be on there.
Kevin Nash, I guess, would be on there, right?
Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. He was the one who financed the whole thing, right?
Yeah,
it was his money.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, he gets a spot on the board, of course.
Stevie Ray?
Yeah.
Yeah.
NWO Sting.
Oh yes, right. NWO Sting.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that's five. You know. That's
yeah. You want it to be odd numbers in case of a tie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. And honestly, Kevin Nash abstains a lot anyway, so you know.
Yeah.
You know, you're lucky to get four. But yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
So, like the NWO of old. Cena and Bray do not get along too long, and John, in fact, pounces on Bray. He throws lots of wild punches, and then we see clips of old Cena rivals interspersed during this moment. So we see CM Punk. I believe we see Randy Orton. We see Brock Lesnar. Do you recall who else we see?
I'm just going to crib straight from Brandon Stroud. I'm going to give him a hat tip here because I brought up his list and he was much more thorough about this. In fact, I would say if anybody wants a nice long written breakdown of this match, go to With Spandex and read Brandon Stroud's thing. It's very good. So here's the list. There's the If Cena Wins, We Riot sign from ECW One Night Stand in 2006. Okay. Then there's Edge cashing in his Money in the Bank on Cena. He loses his championship to Batista at Elimination Chamber 2010. He loses to The Miz at WrestleMania 27, which is something he mentioned, I believe, in a previous promo recently. Okay. I think that sticks with him. I think he hates that happened.
Yeah. I hated it too. So,
yeah.
No, yeah.
Then you get CM fucking Punk.
Right.
There's a, like, I know it's just a clip. I know it's just a second. But it's CM Punk on WrestleMania 36. This is insane. You know, Cena losing to The Rock, Cena losing to Randy Orton when the last World Heavyweight Championship was seen in 2013. Cena losing to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam 2014, that like sort of infamous 13 suplex match, right? Leaving his armbands in the ring at SummerSlam 2016, and then losing to Roman Reigns a year after that.
Okay.
And then I didn't actually see it in the clip, but Brandon Stroud suggests that there's also a shot of him losing to The Undertaker at WrestleMania 34. So these are just, it's just failure after failure after failure after failure. And, you know, I think what this very, very fast set of clips sort of leaves out is that these are the only times in John Cena's 20-year career that he ever lost. but it does, when you put them all together like that, it does seem like a lot, right?
Sure. So yeah, and obviously the common thing is these are all, of course, you know, major rivals that he lost to in the key moments. Yeah, you would probably a good collection of the saddest moments of his career.
Sure. Yeah, oh, and I missed there was Shawn Michaels giving him a cross chop.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Yes.
Because so, Shawn Michaels, still after all this time, is Vince McMahon's favorite wrestler.
So suddenly we then go, and then we cut and we see that John is actually punching a pig doll. Does this pig doll have a name? Is this a regular character, or is this a puppet, or is this just a random pig doll? Do you know the meaning of this pig doll?
My sort of history here, I know a little bit of it. That's Husky Harris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think they call him Huskus as a puppet, but that's meant to be Husky Harris. This sort of piggish character with chocolate on his face.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. And yeah, it's just this weak, pathetic version of Bray Wyatt. And it's just nothing. It's just, of course, John Cena's pulverizing it to nothing. It's completely defenseless.
Yes. And I think it's very important here to note, we see John, he's back in his usual outfit. His hair is very sweaty and he is looking very old in this close up. Like,
so old.
Yes. In the beginning here, he seemed very youthful and very vibrant. I was like noting like, wow, he looks like young and he looks, you know, like slimmer and cut in a good way. He like looks healthier than I remember him looking in the past. But at this point, he absolutely looks like frail, you know.
Well, it turns out taking a couple years away from wrestling does wonders for your to your physical body.
I guess that makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. You know, Edge took 9 years off and he looks better than ever.
Yeah. So anything else to say about this before we get to sort of the wrap up of the match?
I like that there was a costume change mid punch.
Yeah.
Like he's still wearing the NWO stuff when he starts pummeling.
Right.
And then it just cuts and he's just back to his sort of jorts and armbands.
Yes.
As he realizes what he's doing. And like this moment of like old sadness is really great. Like this is a tremendous John Cena performance. He's really putting, it's not like he agreed to this and he's sort of half-heartedly going along with the plan. He's all in on this expression.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't exactly really, not like his motivation, obviously, but what would entice John Cena to really be invested in this beyond just kind of like being a professional? Like, what is this saying about him that, you know, motivates him to put on this performance outside of just, you know, maybe just basic professionalism?
I mean, I can make guesses, but that's all they are.
Okay.
I have no evidence to back any of these up. But my main guess, and this is my most optimistic guess, is that John Cena and Bray Wyatt came up with an amazing idea together because they're both wrestling dorks. And because WrestleMania was so wrecked this year, and I'm using a pirate metaphor because it's a pirate WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Because it's so wrecked.
Vince McMahon was just like, "You want to do that?"
Yeah. I think Vince McMahon was just like, "Fuck it, do it." You know, and that's my most optimistic version of what happened is that John Cena was like, "I want to do something cool. I don't want to just have a match." I'd rather just not be there if I'm just gonna have a match. You know, what else do I need to do, right? I'm John fucking Cena. And then I don't know who had this idea originally. I don't know if it was Bray. I don't know if it was John. I don't know if it was the WWE writers. I don't know if it was Vince. Maybe this was all Vince. Vince is all over this thing. I wouldn't be all that surprised.
Sure.
Right? I don't know who hatched this idea because WWE doesn't provide credits at the end of its show, but someone did. And John Cena was like, yes, this is what we're doing. This is what I'm doing. And I'm all in on this. That's my most optimistic guess. But honestly, I have no idea.
Yes, I like it. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
So the Fiend then appears behind John as we switch the lighting to be a little bit darker.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Fiend locks the mandible claw, and puts Cena in the Sister Abigail position. We then hear Cena's words about wanting to end Wyatt's overhyped career, and then Wyatt hits the move and then chokes Cena again. And then we cut to Bray in his attire from the beginning as referee counting the three. And then we cut back to the Fiend celebrating, and then Cena disappears from the ring like Obi-Wan from the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. He just fades right out, right?
Yes.
It's great. Oh my God, it's great. Tiny detail I want to mention.
Sure.
Earlier on, Bray says, "I was red in a sea of black and white."
Okay.
Then you see him wearing an NWO Wolfpack shirt, which is red.
Right.
And now in this shot, he's got red like clown pants on, and the scene is black and white. Like, it's a black stage with white ropes.
Right.
He's literally red in a sea of black and white in the shot. Like, he calls it earlier on, and like it's subtext becomes text. It's obvious. It's great. I love the attention to detail.
And then we cut back to the arena with Titus O'Neil, who is speechless for a good 10 seconds and closes with, "I don't know what I just saw." And then we cut to the announcers who move in for the Drew McIntyre Brock Lesnar main event. And that's pretty much that.
Are we going to talk about that? No, we are not. We are moving on.
Hey, I didn't
have time. We're not going to touch that at all. I think they brought in Titus O'Neil just for that reaction shot. He's not there for any other reason.
I don't know. Hey, it was effective, you know? Good.
Yeah, it worked out. Titus, we need you to react to something. What? We'll tell you later. Don't worry.
So we have a few questions.
We do.
Yes, we have our good friend Rich Thomas at Earth Dog. He's got a couple. I think we'll just take them together. Are the empty arena shows taking place in a different narrative universe than the regular WWE shows? And then also, in the WWE universe, did the Firefly Funhouse match really happen?
I think one of the things I really love about this match is that there's room for interpretation at all.
Sure.
These empty arena shows have been fascinating. They've mostly been bad, but they have been fascinating.
Sure.
WWE doesn't know how to do a small show because, you know, like a small WWE show is 5,000 people, right?
Right, exactly,
like,
yeah.
Like a failure of a house show is maybe 2,000 people, right? That's a terrible gate for WWE, right? Mm-hmm. Other wrestling companies in the last few months have fared better at this. Just specifically in Japan, Stardom and DDT have done empty arena shows that feel alive, that have a crackle in the air. And I don't think it's because they're used to running smaller shows necessarily, but there's a creativity on display there. And DDT is used to doing crazy shit all the time anyway, so it's just sort of par for the course, you know? But like the Stardom shows have been really, really great. They feel completely different to WWE's shows, which have honestly felt incredibly sterile. the complaint I heard on Twitter all night during WrestleMania was that someone needed to turn on like a white noise machine, because the level of silence in the room is actually unnerving over time, you know?
Right.
So this was, I thought this match was a breath of fresh air because it was outside of that room,
right.
Even though I think a lot of it actually took place in it, but amazing what lighting can do, right?
Sure. Yeah.
It's all choices.
Right. And even the stuff that was in the ring didn't feel like it was in the ring. It didn't feel like it was in an arena. It just it felt like a stage. It felt like a stage where there was nothing else, basically.
But as to whether it all takes place, I mean, I have a feeling WWE's not going to use a whole lot of this footage later. You know, I like right now they still use empty arena footage when they're talking about stories, because frankly, it's been happening for the last 6 weeks or so for them. But I don't know how, like, it, when things go back to normal and they go back to having regular shows, how many clips are they going to use from this time period? It might not count. You know, I see Rich's point about like, yeah, it's like this, but this is, we might not count any of this. This might all go back to, we might all reset this in 6 months. Yeah, but like everybody else, I don't think WWE has a long-term plan right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's sort of like the alliance doesn't count. You know, just the stuff they don't want to count isn't going to count. So,
it didn't happen.
Yeah, the stuff they're embarrassed by isn't going to happen, or the stuff that they is tainted somehow. I would say parts of it, you know, could, but I wonder if narratively what they're going to do after this I'm assuming Cena's not really going to be around for much, whether this does anything with the Bray Wyatt Fiend character, that in which it would really happen in terms of establishing, you know, building, this is something to build upon for this character that the character then follows up for in his next storyline, mm-hmm. you know? So, and in that sense, like I could see it counting, or I could see it just completely being, you know, one night thing. And, you know, I guess time will tell on that.
I think the empty arena shows have been good for Bray Wyatt. Because his sort of creepy character really works in this creepy environment. But as you know, when things go back to normal, you know, classically characters that really work in NXT don't often work in WWE. You know, I always felt that was kind of the case with Bray Wyatt. Like he's a small arena performer, not necessarily a big arena performer. And in an arena with nobody in it, boy, does he own that room. He's really impressed me the last little while, in a way. Because I hate to say this, I kind of took Cena's side for the majority of Bray Wyatt's career. I kind of myself was like, what's the big deal about this guy? Why? I don't get it, you know? So I, you know, can count me impressed. I thought this was phenomenal. I think Rich's other question is also worth exploring. Did this match happen? Did John Cena even show up to WrestleMania? You know, like they might cut to John Cena at his house going, yeah, I couldn't make it because, you know, I couldn't get a flight. What happened? I don't watch the show.
That would be great. In some way that would be terrific. You know, in some way that would be terrible, but in some way that would be wonderful. So, yes.
I mean, because you know he doesn't watch the show, right?
Right. So. No, sure. Yeah. And if John Cena just comes back in 6 months and, you know, like nothing happened, you know, then, you know, it's just like Ric Flair getting kidnapped. You know, it's just, So.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Star of Savage asks, why do you think there wasn't also an ECW segment? The only thing I could really think of, you know, obviously his only real link to ECW is, of course, losing the title of Rob Van Dam. No Rob Van Dam clip of all things. There's the only thing that there is, of course, you referenced it, is the rejection that he had from the ECW crowd in that match. But there's no actual, no reference to RVD himself.
Was Rob Van Dam in that match? I don't remember. I remember Edge in that match.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
You know, I think that's, I think the sign is the ECW thing. Right. I think if that is, I think if people, if they were, if there was a checklist of things that they needed to include and they were like, well, we got to throw some ECW stuff in there too, that sign is the ECW stuff. I think that's, that, that's what that is.
Sure.
But boy, the, like, is a wrestling move a metaphor? Is something you want to maybe start asking yourself. Can a metaphor be a wrestling move? Because that Nitro set, that's a metaphor, man. That's there is something deeply, deeply lodged in Vince's brain about Nitro.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, his therapist's notes must be great.
I believe his therapist's notes are on this podcast, to be honest. All right, last one. Art Between the Ropes asked, is Bray Wyatt the truth teller of WWE? Everybody he feuds with reverts to some former true ? Version of themselves, except Goldberg, who is the most basic character ever and has only ever been like that, so he can't be rattled like that. So,
I loved this question. I love it so great. Much.
Yes.
And I thought maybe because you're not familiar with the run, that this maybe illuminates it a little bit. So, right. Like, he did his first major feud was with Finn Balor, and he kind of destroys Finn Balor at SummerSlam, and Finn Balor, like, leaves the main roster after that. He goes back to NXT. And not only did he go back to NXT, he went to, like, NXT UK. Like, no one's seen him in a while. So there's that one. He turned Seth Rollins from a good guy back into a bad guy where he belongs. He turned Daniel Bryan from a bad guy back into a good guy, and he can do both, but you know, both is good. His short bad guy run had kind of come to an end. People were ready to cheer him again. And then, yeah, he hit a brick wall with Goldberg, who isn't, I, you know, one of these days you and I will talk for a long time about Goldberg, but
that'd be great. And I'm going to have to plug the fact that I was the guest of Stephen Graham's new podcast, Who's Next, which goes through Goldberg matches from the beginning of his career. I was able to watch the first four Goldberg matches and talk about them with him. So I believe the first episode dropped this week. So everyone should check that out if you want some Goldberg talk from me.
I will listen to all of that.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we have any others? There was, I think I had one or
I
two.
I think that might have been it, unless there's something else that you got
yeah.
on there.
I got one from a friend of mine. Fran, do they normally call back to a WrestleMania 6 years ago for feuds? Sometimes, but it's pretty rare. You know, 6 years is a long time, or should be a long time, right?
Right.
But, like, to both of us, WrestleMania 30 kind of feels like last year, doesn't it?
Sure.
So maybe it feels like that to them, too. And they've certainly done callbacks a year or two back, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, the roster is so much more stagnant now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the guys have way more longer careers because there's only one place to work, really, you know.
Yeah, true.
So, and you know, guys will spend 10, 15, 20 years in the company. And that didn't happen, you know, in the 80s and 90s for the most part, with, you know, a few rare exceptions.
That's true.
I think
that's a big
difference.
Yeah, the roster at WrestleMania 14 is not the roster at WrestleMania 18, you know. But the roster of WrestleMania 30 is literally the roster from WrestleMania 36. So,
right.
A lot of similarities.
Yes.
So I think maybe that's it. There's a truncation because they're all still around and they can't move on because what else is there to do?
Sure.
You have to do stuff like this. You got to go a little nuts. I think this is them going, this is a new thing. And I don't mean it's new that they did, like, a match outside of the ring. God knows there's been plenty of those. I mean, this is new in that this is a wrestling match about these characters that had, like, it's not just like a fight somewhere else. This wasn't a fight. This was a session, you know. This was a breakdown. And it's to me the strangest thing was that there was a winner or loser at all. Like, if you go to the Wikipedia page, it says Bray Wyatt defeats John Cena. And I'm assuming at cagematch.net, it says Bray Wyatt defeats John Cena.
It's important to, you know, maintain the record books after all. You know.
Of course.
So, yeah. You put another notch against John Cena's WrestleMania record. That's it's going to be a dent in his legacy, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm at cagematch.net. I'm looking at this.
Okay.
The Fiend defeats John Cena.
Okay.
There it is.
Do we know John Cena's WrestleMania record offhand? I'm just curious. I have no idea what it is. I mean, I can Google it, obviously, which I will just go ahead and do right now while I'm thinking about it. But it's above 500, but I don't think it's that far above 500. Like, I would guess it's like 10-7, maybe something like that. It's actually 10-4. It's actually 10-4, apparently. Huh.
Wow. Well,
there you go. Yeah.
That's definitely above.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. No, it's according to Sporacle. This is probably outdated. I don't know. It doesn't matter. So maybe 10-5 now. So we'll get
maybe
some
maybe 10-5. Still somebody, above 50-50.
Yeah. Somebody'll tweet us with the right response if they want to. So you can tweet me at WrestleSpective. And you can tweet Sawyer at KSawyerPaul. Anything that you sure would can. Like to mention to our listeners before we end the show?
No, that's it. Just, this is a great place to go. Where can I find more of this? Where can I explore? Because there's other weird stuff out there. Guys, if this scratched any sort of itch, there's plenty of weird wrestling out there. It's just that it's so strange to see it at WrestleMania, which is such a straight and narrow show for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crazy thing. Not that the match happened, not that it exists, but that it happened at WrestleMania. That's the crazy thing. But if you want more of that, there's so much more out there. I mean, the first thing to do is go watch some recent Matt Hardy stuff. That's a good place to start. And then DDT, like Orange Cassidy stuff, like lots of fun out there to be had if this kind of stuff made you go, I'm kind of bored with wrestling, but what is that? What's that over there? That looks weird. You know, I would say do that. Go have some fun.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I liked it. It was interesting. It was weird. It was, but it was a lot of fun, you know, and I really enjoyed talking with you about it. So,
me too.
Making a suggestion, yeah.
So yeah, thanks for letting me get all this all right, out. Well, and this is for people who don't know, this is only 2 days after WrestleMania, so this is all very fresh for us.
Sure. Yes.
This all might not matter in 3 weeks when John Cena answers the phone on television and goes,
right,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, we waive the 1 year rule for this. That's so right. It's, you know, luckily we both, according to the WrestleSpective constitution, we both have to agree to it. You know, we have to sign a document. It's a very complicated process, but
yeah,
you know,
the
NWO Championship Committee, you know, it has veto power, but thankfully Kevin Nash wasn't there. So it was a 2-2 tie, which means no veto, which means we're okay. So
that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. And we're back again soon.